Hey everyone, it's Stephen here. Welcome back to another episode of Deep Dive. Today we're talking about something that I think always gets many Singaporeans riled up, especially when it doesn't happen the way we wish it would happen. We're talking about the MRT breaking down. And according to the Land Transport Authority, MRT reliability over the last 12 months has fallen to its lowest level since 2020. So what's being done? Well, a new task force is comprising of LTA and train operators will be set up to review these service disruptions and to identify what needs replacing or upgrading. And in Parliament, Acting Transport Minister Jeffrey Siow pledged to give more precise information during an MRT breakdown. But he also cautioned that it is unrealistic to expect zero disruptions. So what more can be done to ease the stress and inconvenience that comes with every train breakdown? I have with me today Ms. Tin Pei Ling, Chairperson of the Government Parliamentary Committee for Transport.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Steve.
Associate Professor Walter Tissera from Singapore University of Social Sciences.
Hey, everyone. Good to be here.
You know, in Parliament recently, Acting Minister Jeffrey Siow had said that having zero disruptions on our trains is an unrealistic expectation. But at the same time, we know that Singapore is a government that prides itself on having things work effectively and efficiently and pretty much all the time, you know. So this has got some people thinking, well, is that really the case? So Pei Ling, I'm going to start with you. I mean, you are with the GPC. You take our concerns to the government, you know, bring up the questions in Parliament. How can we try and reconcile these two realities?
Well, I think first and foremost, if we look at the more objective performance data right now, the MKBF, which is the mean kilometres between failures, we are still above the set target of 1 MKBF.
Okay.
So even though this year the MKBF is at its lowest since 2020, but it is still above the target of 1 MKBF. So while we should always continue to pursue excellence and always be better, but I think objectively we have to take that into account. And if we look at some of the other more advanced and good performing rails in other parts of the world, we are doing not too bad comparing with the likes of, you know, certain cities in Japan, with Hong Kong, with New York. We still have a bit of a gap to cover if we compare ourselves with Taiwan, which is what I think LTA has been looking at in terms of a reference or benchmark.
Okay.
So I think that's one. But the other thing is also that I think infrastructure overall in Singapore, we have a lot of infrastructure. Anything that is physical will undergo wear and tear at some point. I guess it is something that we all know that with time, there would be the performance degradation over time. But what is more important is that what are the efforts that are put in to maintain, to make sure that it meets a minimum performance standards to get things still going. And in the event that it does break down or disruptions happen, what are the responses that will come in to make sure that things continue?
Okay, so let me first check in with Walter. So it's bad, but what Pei Ling is saying, not that bad by comparison to other countries and, you know, the usual standards. Is that true?
Look, I would put it this way. It's going to be bad if it happens to you, right? So if you're trying to get to work in the morning and a disruption happens, of course that is a terrible thing. But it's also important to distinguish between the experience you have and what you hear about, especially in social media and so on. Because look, when I open my socials, right, I get nothing but, you know, this happened in the MRT, that happened in the MRT. It's been going on for quite a few months now. And of course, I don't hear anything about what's going on in Hong Kong and Japan. So obviously, I would think, wow, Singapore is a terrible system. Hong Kong and Japan is so great, right? But then when you look at the objective data, that's when you see that the impression I've gotten from social media is not quite right, that actually Singapore is comparable, if not slightly better than actually Hong Kong, although, of course, we got to catch up with places like Taiwan, right? So that's why I think there's a bit of this gap here between what happens to you as a commuter and what you hear about. But it's also true, I think, that the measure we have of mean kilometres between failure, it's maybe not the best. And I say this because it treats all incidents as being the same. So as long as it's 5 minutes at least, it's a failure, right? But a failure that happens at 8 a.m., you know, in Punggol or something, is very, very different from one that happens at 1 or 2 p.m. in the same place. So I do think we got to move towards a better measure that captures the human impact, and then we try to improve on that. And I think that will capture the experience better for commuters.
I would just like to add on, I think in Parliament, so Acting Minister Jeffrey did also cite an example in which just one disruption can actually significantly drop or reduce the MKBF performance. And so the question therefore is, given that there are different types of disruptions,
right,
and that just one incident can cause a significant drop in MKBF, then whether this measure continues to be the most accurate or the best measure of rail reliability. So I think that's something that we can explore.
Because Walter, what you're saying is, in the when we look at it from a big picture point of view and just look at the numbers, it seems okay. It's not that bad really. But because it impacts people at the worst possible time and disrupts many lives, in that sense, a lot of inconvenience, you know, not enough buses to take people to work, then it becomes more of an issue. And because I guess people get so upset, we should also look at it in a bigger way. But is this also a fact that we are a victim of our own success? Because it's worked so well for so long, we are just not used to things breaking down, you know, and we don't want it to break down because, well, it never did in the past. So is it about managing expectations as well?
Well, okay. So I think in terms of expectations, I think when you consider the entire system we have in Singapore, right? Everybody expects everyone to show up on time for work, at events, whatever, right? We don't really have any slack built into the system at all. And that is, of course, because like things generally run like clockwork here. Yep. Your public transport, your traffic congestion is manageable, things like that. So we don't have any slack in the system to allow for random bad luck to happen.
Okay.
That's one thing. So I think it does, of course, affect us a lot more than maybe some other places if we are late for whatever it is. The other issue, I think, is we're kind of also a victim of how the system is set up. By this, I mean how our MRT system is laid out and how our HDB towns and the town centres are laid out. Because most of our MRT lines connect all of these HDB towns to the town centre, right, to the CBD. And that's where a lot of activity happens. And because of that, if any of those lines goes down, there's not much realistic alternative for people to get around. It's a bit different from maybe like Tokyo or London, where it's not so much, you know, the periphery to the centre. It's more circular kinds of movements. We don't have that in Singapore. So it's a bit unfortunate. We're trying to do something about that, decentralizing the city, but it's going to take a long time.
Yeah. Wow, okay. So that is basically because so many more people are dependent on this one line, which takes them from A to B, right, into the city. So therefore, it disrupts a lot more lives when it doesn't work, right?
That's right. And there's no circularity because it's not like you can get into another line and go where you're going to go, because that's the experience in London and Tokyo. You have alternatives here. We don't really have them at the moment, although we're trying to build them.
But is it also about managing our expectations? Because I think of our airport, Changi Airport, who, again, you know, always known to be super efficient. It used to be a question of, when the plane lands, do I get out before my bags arrive on the belt? Well, now I do. And sometimes I'm there waiting, thinking, why is the bag taking so long? And then I spoke to a friend who works at the airport and suddenly realized it's because you are getting out way, way faster because of the biometric. So 10 seconds, I'm through the gantry and I'm there waiting for my bags. But the bags are still coming out as fast. It's just that now I feel it takes longer. So could I draw this parallel to the rail system as well? In a way, we have been so used to it working so effectively that when it doesn't, we get really obsessed.
Well, I think there are some parallels that can be drawn indeed. In the earlier years, when infrastructure, when the rails, when the trains are all relatively newer, obviously, it gives wonderful experience. And so we take that as something that is like the go-by, and that is the norm. But over time, as you know, usage goes up, you know, with more rails and more stops, everything add on, there will be stress on the system. I think it's inevitable. And so how do we manage that? But I mean, that being said, is that like what Walter had earlier said, when a commuter is right there in the train, you know, trying to rush to work or maybe an emergency somewhere, and then that train stops, and then there's a lot of anxiety and uncertainty because also that this person may not be familiar with the alternative,
right?
And so that adds to the anxiety, and so that makes that whole experience very unpleasant. So actually, in terms of this, one recommendation, and I believe that the LTA is looking at, is therefore in such instances when there's a delay, apart from communication, is what other services can come in to support. Yeah. So our rail lines now may not be circular in that sense, or not fully circular yet, but we do have buses. We do have taxis, for example. Mm-hmm. So how do we also then tap on these other public transport options to come in to support and help commuters get to their destination right. in time, or at least with minimal impact, so that they can go on with their lives? And I should also add that compared with the other countries mm-hmm. That we have been always observing, they have a longer history. And so even their rails have also been running for longer. And so over time, I think commuters there have grown accustomed to the way of life in that sense. Mm. Whereas for us, for Singaporeans, we have been used to higher standards where things are efficient, on time, on target.
Okay.
So there is that, I think that adaptation that is needed. We need to also be, you know, mindful that there will be times when things do break down, and okay. How do we respond to it is probably more critical here.
So in a way, what you're also saying is that it's almost like, because everything has been so new, this is the first time we are really at the wear and tear stage where things start breaking down now and we're first experiencing it. Whereas other countries like Taiwan have gone through it several times and they've probably figured out how best to alleviate and perhaps even preempt those situations. Whereas, is it fair to say that we are kind of discovering it for the first time now? Which is why, are we not as prepared for this wear and tear? One seems to get that sense.
So actually, there's a concept in engineering called the bathtub curve, which applies to this problem, right? It's mm-hmm. the idea that in any system, you tend to have a higher rate of failure at the very start of the system's inception and basically towards the end of life. And when you look at our MRT system today, actually the kind of problem we have is that we've got different parts of the system at different, some of them are at the end of it, some other parts are actually at the start of it. But then, of course, from the commuter's point of view, you know, any disruption is a bad disruption, mm-hmm. right? But when you look at the TL, for example, right, it's kind of still somewhat at the start of the bathtub curve. There are still issues that have to be worked out. When you look at our old lines, north, south, east, west, what happened is we actually did quite a major upgrade, I think about a decade or so ago, that took care of a lot of issues. But in the last year or so, we're dealing with another new issue, which is the introduction of a new train set. So I know everybody thinks, look, new trains, shiny new, what's the problem? But actually, you have to iron out a lot of teething issues. So we retired a very old but still reliable set of trains, replaced them with new ones, and now we're trying to figure out, okay, can they all run properly and so on. So, I mean, I know it sounds like I'm making excuses, but you know what we're trying to do is just get over this early part of the
right.
problem and bring down the failure rate.
So it's like, why did you do that when everything was working fine? I mean, and now, were you not prepared to try out this new bathtub, having not tested it yourself before letting everybody jump into it, you know?
So while it was working fine, but at some point it will not be working fine.
Okay.
So we will have to come in, I mean, at least the authorities will have to come in and make sure that before that happens, quickly change to a newer one. Because the period where the teething has to be ironed out would be relatively shorter than that plateau whereby okay. things are working well. So we want to make sure, or at least I think we should be aiming to make sure that we extend that flat line, the working well part, for as long as possible. So it's a bit of a trade-off, but we just have to get over the hump in order to have that longer period of working well.
Okay. So the question is, how big a hump is this? Because it seems like this is a very big and long hump that we're still humping along, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, in the case of North, South, East, West line, right, I think the problem really is traced back to COVID delays in the new train sets. Because if everything had gone well, new train sets would have arrived much earlier, we'd have much more time to test and commission them. Then you can have a very graceful retirement of the old train sets and
right.
then phase in with the new. But basically, COVID happened. The new train set got delayed very severely. we kept running the old ones. That led to basically indirectly or directly to last year's major breakdown. And so, you know, now we're accelerating the deployment of the new ones and we really have to work out everything live. That's
so
the issue.
Is it fair to say then that this is a transitional period? That moving forward in the future, when we do change trains, change bathtubs, we will be able to do it more smoothly. That this one is only a one-off occurrence.
I mean, that's what you would expect LTA and MOT to do, like, in conjunction with the public transport operators.
That's what we expect them to do. Expectations don't always meet reality.
Well, I mean, it's back to my point whereby we should always pursue excellence. We should, you know, do with the best intention and do with the best of our ability. So in this case, the agencies, the authorities will have to do that together with the train operators. We representing the voices of our people will also have to make sure that we keep them in check. But I guess at the end of the day is that even so, at the back of our mind, we do have to be mindful that there would be, you know, whether it's teething issues or, you know, so many different parts going on that something somewhere could, you know, be faulty or some issue happen. Knowing that this might happen, being prepared with contingency plans, whether at individual level or at a system level, I think that would be quite critical.
So it really does sound like managing our expectations. So in a way, if I travel to certain other cities where the subway I know is not as efficient, I almost know it's going to break down and therefore I am mentally prepared for it. You know, so ironically, again, this is because of a victim of our own success. But does that also mean, okay, I'm ready for it. Now I also need to know what are the other options available. So again, which means we kind of need the trains to break down a bit more so that everybody can experience the
other options, right?
And then they will beef up the other options to make them better so that at the end of the day, we have more than just a train option.
So I think the task force that has recently been convened will look at some of these things. So apart from the train itself, but also the responses, service recovery, you know, like the timeliness of it, and to be a bit more differentiated in approach, if I could say. Because currently, once there's a disruption or there's a breakdown somewhere, the almost immediately everything stops. And then they will go and figure out what happened, and that takes time, that adds to anxiety. But for the task force, I think when they look at this, hopefully they will, you know, be a bit more granular. Like what Walter said earlier, not every disruption, not every breakdown is the same. And so how do you discern that? How can you, in the first instance, quickly come in, diagnose, and then, you know, find the better solution so that you minimize that impact. And of course, with that, there is the public comms. How timely are you in terms of sharing the information? What other things can you bring in? For example, your buses, bridging or normal feeder, or, you know, your taxis can or the private hires. How do you mobilize that to come in and support?
And that's another big bugbear, that people feel the communications has not been adequate. When it does break down, then the options are not clear. You know, signage to tell people where to go, which buses to take, and they come in too late and too long. So again, this part seems to be missing, this communication part. I mean, Minister Siao himself had said that, you know, suggested perhaps a single app that commuters could use. Because now they're saying, I go to the Facebook page, but it's like delayed. I already know it's broken down because I'm stuck here. You know, how significant is this role of communication, do you think, in helping alleviate this problem?
Well, I think communication has always been a very critical piece. Whether it's in this case for rail performance or in other parts of governance. Because I think in the end, Singaporeans are reasonable. I think we all understand that no matter how tip-top a system is, there will be times when things break down. But it is in those moments that when there's uncertainty, people don't know what to expect. There's this anxiety, I need to get to somewhere in time. Therefore, timely comms with, you know, sharp to the point kind of messages will be important. And you don't want to be wasting time, you know, from one platform, one app to another, trying to figure out where. So I guess having that centralized channel or the integrated one-stop platform where people can get the information, I think will be useful. But even with that, a lot of pre-communication or education will have to be done, because you can have that platform, but whether people know about it and download in time, people are, I mean, usually disruptions are unanticipated.
Right, of course.
So you really have to, you know, push out, you know, make sure that people are on that platform so that if anything happens, immediately you get a ping.
But this goes back to your earlier statement about how we need to have a better understanding of what alternate options are available. So again, I mean, and something like this kind of communication, as you say, should already exist even when things are running smoothly, so that I'm aware and I know I can check on it to get updates on the fact that things are running smoothly, so that I know where to look when things are not running smoothly. But right now, there isn't really a singular platform. We're told that from station to station, staff also react quite differently. So there is no consistency.
Yeah, you know, on this topic, I thought that LTA's My Transport app was actually supposed to be one of these venues to get your information, also some ideas on routing and things like that. But I do think that, you know, it's either supposed to be the platform, or if it isn't, then obviously LTA can consider leveraging it, right? To provide you with a consistent source of information delays, but also routing options and so on. Of course, the third-party providers like your Google Maps and so on, a lot of them already do this as well. And I think there, perhaps the only thing we can look at is what's the level of integration at the API level, right, between these systems and the information that LTA and the operators put out. Because once you have that integration, then, you know, things get pushed out instantly to whatever your own platform of choice is. Because some of us want to use Google, some, you know, want to use MyTransport, whatever it is. But I think, you know, coming back to this issue of, you know, at the train station itself, are things sometimes a bit chaotic and so on, right? I mean, yeah, I mean, I think that's another area which obviously would have to be looked at. I do know that, you know, for all of the train stations, they do have all these drawer plans for dealing with different kinds of disruptions. I mean, of course, the staff are trained in it and so on, but, you know, perhaps besides the plans being in place, after incidents happen, I suppose there would also have to be the necessary process to evaluate how well was the plan actually put into action and, you know, what are the learnings from this? Because I don't think we should be going out there and then, you know, pointing fingers at the station managers. They're under a lot of stress to deliver in a short amount of time. But it's more about, can we do something as a system to help them do their job better, you know, when things actually happen? I think that's how we should look at it.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, if everyone is on the same page, if I know what to do when something goes wrong, you know what to do, then, you know, it can be very calm and it can be done very orderly because everyone's kind of like, okay, broke down, no problem. I'll just head up this way and go for the bus, you know. Actually, some bus routes have been reduced. They've taken away some buses because they realize that MRT kind of covers the same route. Whereas now, if we again look at alternate plans, then maybe we should be looking at more buses back on the road so that not everyone is relying on the train to get from point A to B. They also have these other options, which now in some areas have been removed, you know. So in fact, what you're saying does make sense. But again, this is a question of, I guess, how do we balance it all? And how can we find a way to meet the right needs? And is there a sweet spot, Walter, where we can, you know?
Yeah, I mean, this is a very difficult problem because obviously from the resident's point of view, you want the best, most customized service for your needs, right? Mm. But then when you look at the system as a whole from LTA or the government's point of view, then you realize if this service, admittedly, it's going to meet that particular block's needs very well, right? But if the service is actually running at a huge loss, then the question becomes, is it so fair to provide the service when, you know, basically other services in Singapore are running at a lower loss? And I say lower loss because actually what some people kind of forget from time to time is that in general, our public transport services actually run at a loss. And it's the government or taxpayer which basically puts in about $1 billion plus a year or so to help keep it running like the current fare levels.
Yeah, so since we're losing money already, why not just lose a bit more and make it better for everybody? I mean, in a way, let's talk about the money because the transport system is meant to be there for the people, right? So people don't want to pay more, but they want more convenience at the same time, right, Pei-Ling?
I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's okay, number one, the government is putting in money, is investing in the public transport system, the infrastructure, and also subsidizing the fares. Even though, you know, every now and then there will be announcements of public fares going up and nobody likes it, admittedly. But it is actually subsidized. And I do also know and acknowledge that the MOT, the LTA, does exert pressure on the operators to make sure that they keep things going but cost low.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that's one. Well, if we can always ask that, you know, government pay more so that we can offer more and without commuters, you know, increasing their share mm-hmm. of, you know, the payments. But is it sustainable? That's, I think, always a question that we have to ask ourselves. Because at the end of the day, the government's money, like what Walter had pointed out, does come from taxpayers. Yeah. It has to come
it's
from somewhere.
Money, yeah.
Yeah. So there is a certain balance that we will have to strike at the mm-hmm. end of the day, because it's not just fiscal prudence, but it's also at what point, you know, what kind of, you know, standards are we willing to accept going forward. We can always, you know, ask for more, as I mentioned, but it does come at a price, lah. Yeah.
So how do we resolve this? I mean, it sounds like we've actually gone on a train ride in this discussion. It's almost like taking the circle line. We've come back to the beginning, you know, where we're still with the situation. We still have the issue at hand. And the question is, how can we move forward from here? What do you guys think? What would the task force recommend? They will come look at these issues, and perhaps Walter, you can start. Yeah. In your opinion, what do you think will be some of the key areas that they will end up focusing on?
So I think we're going to have to do a lot more to get all of us as a society, so, you know, commuters, also the taxpayers, also the government and operators, right? All of us to think that this is actually a shared problem that we need to contribute to in some way. So what I mean by that is, I think from the commuter point of view, right? Today, of course, you would think, yeah, I'm paying the fares, right? So of course, you know, I've got a right to, you know, feel what I feel about the system mm-hmm. and so on. But we also have to recognize that besides paying the fares, because of the very large level of public subsidies involved, when we are thinking about what we would like the system to improve on, what we want the system to do and so on, we have to also keep in mind, okay, you know, is this thing that I want, is it actually cost effective, or is it going to lead to a situation where eventually I will be paying a lot more through the fares and also taxpayers paying a lot more and so on. So, but can we have the public also take more ownership and, you might say, more more engagement in the decision whether to have or to cut these services, from the perspective this is also something that we want to do for ourselves so that we're buying the right services with our money, right? So that's one thing. Then I think when it comes to LTA, the operators and so on, I do feel that there needs to be a bit more public ownership, I think, of some of these decisions that are made on cost effectiveness, basically to manage our system better. Because today, I think as Peeling pointed out, right, with LTA and the government does lean on the operators quite hard to actually be smart and cost effective about managing the system. And this is the right thing to do, because we don't want them to have, you know, gold-plated checks that they write, like, and then we cash as a public. But I think sometimes there's a sense that we rely on the operators too much to do this, and some decisions are actually pretty big, and government also ought to be involved. And to my mind, the best, most recent example is actually last year's very major breakdown, right? We were running old trains for longer than it should have been run because of the delay in the new trains. And I think the operators did the best they could with that. But if perhaps the government had come in much earlier, there could have been a decision that would be different. For example, not stressing the old train so much, but accepting that meant that there would be a difference in the tempo of operation, so people get to work a bit later and things like that. So these are trade-offs you have to make. And you can't ask the operator to be the only decision maker. So I do hope that the task force looks at how basically government gets more involved with some of these key decisions.
Just building on what Walter has shared, I think first of all, whatever that needs to renew, overhaul, the maintenance, all should continue, and the sharing of responsibility, of course, is should continue to be central to this approach. At the same time, as technology advances, actually, we should also invest in this. So we talk about predictive maintenance, and this is something that it's not just rail, but actually in different you know, whether it's at HDB flats, lifts, etc. Actually, there is a lot more that predictive maintenance can do because technology is maturing, whether it's AI, sensor technology, etc. Actually, I think there's something that it's worth exploring. Now, in addition to that, I think there has also been conversation in the public about autonomous vehicles.
Yeah.
So I think that is something that is worth exploring as well as a complement or a supplement or a complement to the rail, to the train system. And this, I think, adds capacity and it solves the manpower issue and therefore, hopefully, adds options to the overall public transport network, and that citizens, commuters can therefore not just rely on rails, but some of these other land transport as well. Then, on top of all this, actually the community, that means non-government actors, can also play a part. So, for example, within the community, if cost, managing the transport cost is a challenge, actually there is scope for us to come in to support, whether it's through additional vouchers or through, you know, other forms of, you know, escort services for to help seniors and others. Okay. I think we've seen this happening. There are also, you will see in pockets of Singapore whereby there's more localized shuttle bus and feeder bus services that addresses some of those last mile connectivity challenges. And I think there has been, you know, some successes that we have seen, and from feedback by residents, they do appreciate that.
Right, right.
So I think overall, when we talk about shared responsibility, I think it's also how the community can come in and plug some of these last mile gaps.
Yeah, so we don't have to look to the government to solve everything in that sense. Some of that, I guess, we can take the initiative. But actually, just before we go, one last question just came to mind. Is it fair to say we have higher expectations of our public transport system because cars are so expensive?
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to throw that in because I don't have an option, so therefore I have to take it, so you better work.
Oh, I completely agree on this. I mean, the entire idea with having a COE system, right, a price-based system for managing traffic congestion, is that if you happen to be priced out of it, it should still be okay because we're going to spend more effort and money, right, in making sure you can get to where you want to go without relying on a private car. So I completely agree with that. So I do think we have this special responsibility to do much more than maybe a comparable city or country would to ensure public transport. But that's just because we have a system where we don't, hypothecate, which is we don't directly link one pocket of money, you know, to a direct to another source of spending and
that's
on.
That's a debate for another day. There's a whole other podcast in itself. Okay, well, thanks so much for coming in, sharing your thoughts with us. I think one of the other challenges people face is sometimes flexibility at work. I think also, you know, bosses need to be more understanding and knowing that sometimes things happen, you know, life happens. So be more understanding of your staff coming in a bit later. On that note, we haven't had time to talk about that. Again, another whole discussion. But we just want to say thanks to all of you who have been listening in. If you have thoughts about this issue, do drop us a note. Otherwise, a shout out to my team, Tiffany Ang, Junaini Johari, Joanne Chan, Ho Pei Ning, Nat Fetovero, Alison Jenner. And video is by Clement Lee and Hanida Amin. See you guys next week. Bye for now.